We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We didn't make anyone any money last night with our picks in Sweet 16, but we didn't lose any money either.
My pick to win got beat by Purdue last night.
We broke even. It could have been worse. All
that's
right?
Awful. Yeah, we'll you get and into I were that. On our bets, yes.
We'll take another run at that maybe later on in the show today. Gary Parrish, meanwhile, businessman in show business. We'll catch up with him momentarily, talk about the Sweet 16, last night's games, tonight's games as well. Does he think Tennessee fouled Purdue's three-point shooter at the end of the game? Everyone's talking about it. I'll ask GP straight out the shoot when we do that. Dan Wolkin from USA Today going to weigh in on the Sweet 16 as well. He called his shot last night on Twitter, saying there was a 65% chance that the Tennessee-Purdue game would end on a controversial foul call. By George, he was right. Jeff Calkins, 5 o'clock, because he visits every day at 5. We'll talk to him then. We'll get the four stories at some point. Well, I'll discuss the end of Mr. Perfect Bracket Man, some dude from Ohio that nailed every single game right up until Tennessee lost, and I couldn't be happier that his bracket got busted. I'm not a spiteful guy, Brad.
Damn.
No, that's not true. I am. But I'll explain why I'm delighted in four stories. Then we'll do dinner, go get you on your weekend. But first, Gary Parrish, host of the show, college basketball columnist, TV analyst for CB Sports. CBS Sports. He was busy late into the night last night talking about that Sweet 16. GP, let's not dance around it. Did you agree with the call made that Tennessee's Lamonte Turner fouled Purdue's Carson Edwards on his potential game-winning three?
Yeah, I mean, it was a foul.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how you could argue it's not a foul.
I don't either.
You can't – just because you don't hit somebody's arm doesn't mean it's not a foul. I mean, when you make contact the way Lamonte Turner made contact with Carson Edwards, that's a foul. And I'll give Rick Barnes credit. Afterward, he was asked about it, and some coaches in his spot would say – you know, I can't comment on the officials, or they would leave some sort of wiggle room to make it clear to you they were not satisfied with the way that whistle was blown. And yet Rick said it was a foul. He fouled him. You know, like, it is what it is. You know, the refs made the right call, and the refs did make the right call. And so I didn't like that it was a foul because I had Tennessee going to the Final Four. But, you know, if you foul somebody in the first second, last second, or anywhere in between, the whistle's supposed to be blown, and then the officials, who often screw up things, actually got that right.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's social media, and everybody likes to disagree about everything on social media, but as I'm watching the game and then watching the reactions, and a majority of the people, and I don't know, maybe a lot of them were Tennessee fans, no foul. I'm like, he got him. Like, it's, I would hate it if it happened to my team, but it's a foul. Like, I don't think it was that much of a debate, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, me neither. I mean, we have high-definition slow-motion replays.
Yes. Like
we really don't have to argue about this stuff. It's
no.
a difficult job for the officials in real time at game speed to be able to distinguish whether that's a foul or not a foul. That's why they sometimes get things wrong. It's not because they're biased or they're cheating. It's just that it's a hard job. But with the benefit of HD television and slow-motion replays, these things really shouldn't be a debate from our perspective. Block charge calls can sometimes be a debate because those are tricky, and honestly, not everybody commenting on them understands exactly what is a block and what is a charge, what's allowed and what isn't. But shooting fouls are pretty simple, you know, and Carson Edwards was fouled, and the officials blew the whistle, and that's exactly what they should have done.
And meanwhile, that would then overshadow what turned out to be a pretty entertaining game, certainly a great game in the second half. Purdue had that huge lead. Tennessee chips away. Then it's like two guys trading haymakers with Ryan Klein and Admiral Schofield. That was great, which then brought us to the foul call, which then eventually got us to OT. So my question, did that call, which a lot of people are talking about, obviously, did that kind of get Rick Barnes, I don't want to say off the hot seat, but at least having to stop him from answering questions about the play calling that he had down the stretch and overtime? I'm talking about the timeout off the double pass. Let's start with that one. The timeout off the double pass with 1.7 seconds to go. This is still regulation. Now, it sounds kind of crazy because, granted, you're not going to get a terrific look at a shot unless you got, like, Steph Curry out there. But to inbounds it, throw another pass, and then take the timeout, like, I didn't get that one at all.
There's nothing to get about it. It just doesn't make any sense. You've got a clock problem. I mean, you can't make This isn't in the NBA where you can advance it to half court. You know, this is, you're going to have to go the length of the court, and there's really no obvious way or realistic way to make two passes, get a timeout, and then set up something in a half court. Like, it's unlikely that you're going to score no matter what, but the only way to go about it is to make a lengthy pass, hope you get a clean catch, and then hope you get a clean look of a shot that is still unlikely to go in. That's what they should have done. I don't understand how you could have drawn up what they drew up in that huddle and think that you had enough time to execute what it is they were trying to execute. And then to me, the other big thing is that he started overtime with Grant Williams on the bench.
I was just about to get that. Yeah.
I'll never understand that as long as I live. You know, Grant Williams is your best player.
Yep.
He's the reason you beat Iowa in overtime, because you played everything through him. He's a two-time SEC Player of the Year. And I know that he had four fouls, but you get five. And he never got his fifth. And that means that you held him out of seconds that he otherwise could have been playing. By the time Rick put Grant back in the game, Tennessee was already down three, and they never were tied again. And I don't know that starting Grant Williams would have changed the outcome of the game, but coaches who voluntarily remove their best players from competition because of the fear of a next foul, it's not even debatable anymore. It's the wrong thing to do. I can understand 50 years ago you didn't have the proper understanding of why you shouldn't do this. But there's been enough studies done on it now, and there's enough data available. Voluntarily removing people from games when there's a decent chance, if not a great chance, the only thing you're doing is limiting the time that they could actually be on the court, is a nonsensical approach. Where you see it mostly is in the first half when somebody picks up two fouls. There are so many coaches out there who auto-bench players with two fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got two fouls with 11 minutes to go in the first half, so I'm going to sit him the next 11 minutes. That means you're removing a key player, somebody you would prefer to play, from the court for 11 minutes of a 40-minute basketball game. A little more than 25% of the game, you're voluntarily removing that player from competition. And then what happens? Player finishes with three fouls. Player finishes with four fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that of those 11 minutes that you set him in the first half, however many of those minutes he would have played, if not for the perception of foul trouble, that's what you just cost him. It's a little bit like not wanting to use a certain relief pitcher until you've got a lead in the ninth, and then while you're waiting to get to that place, you're down six runs. Like, well, okay, so what, you saved him for what?
Yep.
And same thing in basketball. You saved him for what? What good does having Grant Williams at the end of the game do you if the game was decided 3 minutes earlier, 2 minutes earlier? It doesn't do you any good. And so you could have, in theory, got a maximum of 5 minutes from Grant Williams in overtime. Tennessee didn't get that. And the only reason Tennessee didn't get that is because of the decision to not start him in overtime. And, again, I can't stress this enough. I don't know that that was the difference in the game. Hell, it probably wasn't. But it doesn't mean that it was a sensible decision. And these are the little things that that really get under a spotlight at this time of the year, because these little bitty decisions within a basketball game can be the difference between you going to a Final Four or not, winning a national championship or not.
I'll be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of Purdue this year, at all. Honestly, why should I have? But I really like what I saw last night. Like, they got length. Granted, I know Klein balled out. It was a career night for him. But Carson Edwards is still lighting it up. First player since Steph Curry to score 25 or more in four straight NCAA tournament games. So now Purdue is one win from the Final Four for the first time in 39 years. And they're going up against the one now in Virginia, who's a win away from their first Final Four in 35 years. Like, that shapes up. Like, to me, that could be a really, really good game.
I think it will be. And they're both great stories for different reasons. You know, Virginia obviously last season became the first one seed to ever lose to a 16. Now they're one win away from going to Tony Bennett's first Final Four. And if they do that, then just two wins away from a national championship. On the other side, you know, Matt Painter is also, like Tony Bennett, recognized as one of the great coaches in college basketball, but also, like Tony Bennett, has never been to a Final Four. Mm-hmm. So one of the nice things about this matchup is that one of the really good coaches in college basketball, great, even, I don't hesitate to say. And also seemingly good guys. Like, you're not going to find many people in the coaching profession or in my profession who don't like Matt Painter or who don't like Tony Bennett. And so one of them is guaranteed to get to his first Final Four. And that's super meaningful because I don't know if this is fair or not. I lean toward probably not because of the nature of the NCAA tournament. Because there are some very mediocre coaches who have been to Final Fours and great ones who never have. And so it's not where you actually should draw the line about whether somebody's good or not. Because, again, they're bad guys who have gotten there and great guys who never have. But for whatever reason, we identify coaches as, yeah, he's a Final Four coach, or he's never been to a Final Four. Yeah, he's one of the five best who's never made it to a Final Four. And Matt or Tony right now, Matt and Tony right now, are both on that list, to the extent people have a list, of best coaches who have never been to a Final Four, and one of them will be removed from the list because tomorrow they're going to play a basketball game against each other. One's got to win, the other has to lose. And so it'll be heartbreaking for one, incredible for the other, and great stories either way because the Virginia story is well documented at this point. What's less known for casual fans is the Purdue story. Carson Edwards, by the way, was just a guy coming out of high school. Wasn't supposed to be an All-American. He wasn't a McDonald's All-American. I don't even believe he was – he might have been a borderline top 100 recruit, but he was not supposed to be anything like this. Mm-hmm. And when they got him on campus, they realized pretty quickly he's way better than even they thought, but certainly better than the recruiting analyst recognized. And Purdue was good last season. And then Purdue lost four of its starters. The only starter back from last season's team – is Carson Edwards. And so some people in the preseason made Carson Edwards the preseason National Player of the Year because he was obviously going to put up big numbers, and he did. But the reason we didn't at CBS Sports is that there's a long sample size of years and years and years that shows that it doesn't matter how incredible your numbers are. If you're not on a legitimate top 20 team, you're just not going to be the National Player of the Year. It's not enough to be a great player. If, you know, John Morant is a great player. He's nobody's National Player of the Year because his team wasn't good enough to make him that. Mm-hmm. Zion Williamson is good enough. His team's good enough to make him that. That's why Zion Williamson should be everybody's Player of the Year. He's not only the best player in the country, he's the best player on the best team in the country, at least the team that got the number one overall seed in the tournament. And so when we would talk about this in the preseason, Matt Norlander and I on the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, I'd say, listen, you can make Carson Edwards a preseason first-team All-American because you don't have to be on a great team to be that. You just got to be on a good team to be that, and he's going to be on a good enough team to be that. But I don't think this is a top 15 team. I don't think it's a top 20 team. And if you're not on a top 20 team, you're not winning National Player of the Year, so we're not going to make him National Player of the Year. Well, all these months later, what we found out is that the team is good enough. Now, the reasons I had for thinking they wouldn't be were rooted in pretty solid stuff. Mm-hmm. They are asking everybody on that roster, outside of Carson Edwards, to play a different and bigger role. And it's not like they were enrolling a couple five-star freshmen, top 10 class. It was basically just role players going to be asked to be big-time players. And would they be equipped to do it? Maybe. I never rule anything out, but I was skeptical. And yet here they are, one win away from the Final Four. Long story, not quite as long. Carson Edwards' team is good enough to make him National Player of the Year if Zion Williamson did not exist. And Matt Painter being able to lose four starters and get his team in this position is a pretty remarkable coaching job.
And on the flip side last night, another coach that hasn't won it all yet but maybe has a shot at it this year. Well, he still has a shot at it because they're still playing. That's Mark Few and Gonzaga. They beat Florida State. And then how about Texas Tech? Chris Beard has the Red Raiders back in back-to-back Elite Eights. And it's funny how this sport works. So, like everybody else, doing a little reading and everything, you realize, and I know Brad probably gets his dander up, I guess if that's like the old-timey way to say it. He was UNLV's coach for 10 days before Texas Tech took him away.
Maybe one of our best coaches.
Because Memphis hired Tubby Smith, which opened up the Texas Tech job. And they weren't picked to be anything good this year. Like Purdue, you just mentioned, they lost five of their top six scorers, and yet here they are again. Like, how good a coach is this guy?
I think he's great. And I might actually throw that word around a little more often than I should, mm-hmm. but I don't hesitate to use it with Chris. I think he's incredible. If he's been a Division I head coach now for 4 years, That's it. 4 years. The first year was at Arkansas Little Rock, and I think most people remember that team. They went to the NCAA tournament. They beat Purdue, Matt Painter's Purdue team, in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But what's even more impressive about Chris Beard being great in 1 year at Little Rock, team was 30-5. What's even more impressive than that is if you look at what Little Rock was before he got there and what Little Rock has been since he left. So let's just go 3 years before Chris Beard got to Little Rock and 3 years since Chris Beard's been at Little Rock. He was there in 2015-16. Let's go back to the 2012-13 season. Little Rock finished 220th at KenPom. 2014 season, they finished 219th at KenPom. 2015 season, they finished 235th at KenPom. Then comes the Chris Beard season, finished 56th, went to the NCAA tournament, won a game. Then he leaves, and you would think, okay, but like he got it to a really high level. Nope, dropped right back down the year after he left. 2017, 245. 2018, 296. Mm-hmm. And this season, 225th. In other words, over the past 7 years, Little Rock has finished 219th or worse at KenPom 6 times. And the only exception is the Chris Beard year, and Chris Beard had him in the top 60. Like, that is undeniable. That's the result of him and nothing else. Then he takes the UNLV job for a few days. And, by the way, I've heard some people say, my God, what would he be doing at UNLV right now if he were
– Oh, man,
killing it.
He wouldn't be at UNLV.
No.
Somebody would have already paid him.
Yeah, poached him, right.
Yeah, after – because in 2 years at UNLV, he would have been winning Mountain West titles, mm-hmm. and somebody would have said, my God. And, somebody else would have already bought
sure.
it. All right? But either way, he would have killed it at UNLV, yes. So he takes the UNLV job for, you know, a few days. And when he got there, he realized, first off, you got to understand he was the coach at Little Rock. So if you get offered the UNLV job, you just take it.
Yeah.
Same way T.J. Otzelberger at South Dakota State gets offered the UNLV job, you just take it. It's a life-changing job from a money perspective. You go from making a few a few hundred thousand dollars to you're a multimillionaire. You don't pass that up. But when Chris got there, he realized pretty quickly, woo, this is in bad, bad shape. Like, I'm here and I've signed the contract and it's a lot of money, so, you know, I'm not going to undo it and go to Little Rock, but this is in worse shape than I anticipated it being, than I was made to believe it was. And so, you know, I remember talking to his agent around that time, and it was like, dude, he's got to just find players. He didn't have any players. Like, there's nobody on campus. Like, if UNLV had to play a basketball game right now, they wouldn't have 5 players.
No.
Couldn't play. So then I think everybody knows what happened. About 1 million people turned down the Georgia Tech job, and then Georgia Tech settled on Josh. And then Memphis paid Josh to take the Georgia Tech job. And then Memphis, nonsensically, but it happened, decided to pay $3 million a year for Tubby Smith, at which point Texas Tech needed a coach. And here was this guy who just led Little Rock to the NCAA tournament and a win over Purdue, and you can pay him whatever you want, but way more than UNLV can pay him. And, oh, by the way, total coincidence, but he happens to be from West Texas, has daughters who are living in West Texas. So you can give him more money, better job, in a better league near his roots. It's a no-brainer. He takes Texas Tech. So then he takes over for Tubby, and in the spirit of being fair, Tubby left him a decent situation, and he did a good job with it. But then last year, he elevated it to another level. And though the surface-level thing that people said was, oh, yeah, well, this is, you know, he's doing it with Tubby's players, he was not doing it with Tubby's players. He had, like, one of Tubby's players, maybe two, that were meaningful. Everybody else, they were his guys. And he took them to the Elite Eight. First Elite Eight in school history. Texas Tech been playing basketball for a long time, had never been to an Elite Eight, does it last year. And now he's got them back there this year after losing 5 of his top 6 scores, and he has had back-to-back top 16 pick, or he had a top 16 pick in the NBA draft last year in Zaire Smith, and now he's going to have a lottery pick in Jarrett Culver. So some people have said, yeah, but he's got pros. Those guys weren't pros coming out of high school. Zaire Smith and Jarrett Culver were both sub-100 prospects coming out of high school who started at Texas Tech last year and took them to the Elite Eight. And when I would talk about Alex Lomax and Tyler Harris, I would always say you usually don't have freshman sub-100 guards starting for a very good team. But, like, the rare exception to that rule is what's happening at Texas Tech last season, because you had Zaire Smith and Jarrett Culver starting and as freshmen, sub 100 recruits, and leading Texas Tech to an Elite Eight. Well, Zaire Smith becomes the first ever, as far as I know, sub 100, one-and-done, top 16 pick in the NBA draft. And now a year later, Jarrett Culver is going to be maybe a top five pick in the NBA draft. And I guess it's possible Chris just stumbled into both of those guys, got lucky, you know, found these two sub 100 prospects who were just way under-recruited and unheralded and overlooked. But I think it's more likely he got some stuff to work with and then developed them into the top 20 picks. Because, like, who else does that? Mm-hmm. Who else takes sub 100 players and turns them into top 20 picks inside of a year or two? I'll tell you the one answer. John Beilein. John Beilein's done it a whole bunch of times, taking sub 100 or, you know, sub 85 guys and turned them into early entries into the NBA draft. But what is John Beilein known as? A brilliant basketball coach and great developer of talent. I think Chris Beard has established himself as a brilliant basketball coach and great developer of talent. And I don't care if I'm UCLA, Arkansas, Texas A&M, any of those big jobs that are still open, I would want to know how interested he is in my job, if at all, before I moved on to maybe anybody else.
I was just about to ask you that. Why hasn't anybody else come around then? 56 wins in the last couple of years.
They will. You know, I think Texas Tech has already settled on Buzz, but I think you could make an argument that maybe you'd want Chris Beard instead of Buzz. Either one would be great, and I do think they'll get one of them. But, you know, I'd be picking between Chris Beard and Buzz and putting $5, $6 million a year on the table. At Arkansas, I think Kelvin Sampson's going to be the guy. All indications are that Arkansas is waiting on him. Mm-hmm. And Kelvin would be great there. But I could see if maybe Arkansas decided, hey, let's put $5 or $6 million per year on the table for Chris Beard and see if he'll jump at that first. And then, honestly, if I'm UCLA, and I know it's a questionable fit because Chris is a Texas boy who is still loves to fish and listen to Travis Tritt, right? I mean, he is – if Cowboy Carson's Cowboy Carson, Cowboy Beard is Cowboy Beard. And so that might be a weird fit in Westwood. I acknowledge that. And I know that his agent, Brett Just at CAA, who is also Kelvin's agent, by the way, is a real big believer in getting his clients in good places that are good fits. It's why Chris makes a lot of sense at Texas Tech. But I tend to believe great basketball coaches are great basketball coaches. And if I were UCLA and I'm about to get turned down by Tony Bennett, about to get turned down by John Calipari, I'd seriously consider offering my job to Chris Beard, because I'll just put it as simple as this. If you can win at this level at Texas Tech with rosters that have had incredible turnover and zero, like, top 50 recruits, you can win anywhere. Like, what happens when you get a UCLA job where kids actually want to be there? Because it's Southern California, because it's UCLA, because there's pros on campus every day, because it's beautiful. What happens when you put a coach who can do what Chris Beard is doing in Lubbock, Texas, at a place where recruits really just sort of fall right onto your roster? I don't think there's any limit to what you could do.
Yeah, I think there's Cowboys that have done all right, by the way, in Hollywood. Like Reba McEntire, I'm not saying she's a Cowboy, but she's country through and through. She had a pretty nice career in TV. Blake Shelton, like the list goes on. All right, it's GP up in New York City. Before we let you go, we got four games to go tonight. Michigan State, LSU, North Carolina, Auburn. You got Houston and Kentucky. But all due respect to all those games, I just want to keep watching Zion Williamson. And you got Duke facing Virginia Tech tonight. Which is your game? If you had to pick one of the four, someone said you can only watch one tonight, GP. Which one are you watching?
You watch the Zion game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the star of this sport. Yep. He's the star of this tournament. Every game that he plays is going to be the highest rated game of the night. And it's not just because it's Duke, although that's got a lot to do with it. It is because it's Zion. So that's the game that I would watch. But I think the most entertaining game is probably going to be North Carolina-Auburn, because you got a North Carolina team that plays literally faster than any other Roy Williams team has ever played in terms of adjusted tempo. Like, Roy likes to play fast, get the ball off the rim and go. But with Kobe White, and you would think that he's had teams, you know, he had Ty Lawson. You know, he's had super fast point guards before, but Kobe White is right there with any of them, and Kobe White is the reason this team plays as fast as it does. And so you've got that team with 2 one-and-done freshmen in Nasir Little and Kobe White, 2 incredible seniors in Luke May and Cam Johnson, Hall of Fame coach, terrific offensively. They check all the boxes for a national champion. I'm not saying they'll win it. I'm just saying they can. And then an Auburn team that is super interesting because of the way it plays. You know, 49, basically 50% of Auburn's field goal attempts are going to be three-point attempts. Like, every other shot is a three-pointer with Auburn. They play very much like NBA, like advanced NBA teams play now. Bruce Pearl has locked in on what has trickled down from the NBA, which is you need to be taking three-pointers. Even if you're not a great three-point shooting team, the teams that understand analytics now are taking a lot of them.
It's like my guy T.J. Otzelberger.
Paul Weir is a great example of this at New Mexico. Yeah. New Mexico's teams aren't he hasn't turned it around there yet, but I've talked to Paul enough to know they are committed to playing a certain style, and it's going to be shoot a lot of three-pointers. And so Bruce has tied himself to that this year. So, like, against Kansas in the round of 32, Auburn took 31 shots. I mean, took 61 shots, 30 of them with three-pointers.
My goodness.
And so about 50% of their field goal attempts are from beyond the arc, and they make about 38% of them on average. Mm-hmm. So the point I made last night on CBS Sports Network is that Auburn is the better team. Auburn should win the game. But anytime you're playing somebody, and understand, at the tempo at which North Carolina plays, you know, Auburn might get 65 shots. You know, they might take 30 to 35 three-point attempts. And if they hit their average, you're in trouble. I know you're not in trouble, but they're going to be able to hang around with you. Mm-hmm. But what happens if they take 35 and make 17, make 18? Like, I don't care who you are. How
problems.
Good you've been.
Yeah.
If a college basketball team in a 40-minute game is going to knock down 15, 16, 17 three-pointers on mm-hmm. you're in a bad, bad spot. And Auburn's got a chance to do something like that. It's unlikely, but they've got a chance to do something like that because they're committed to taking the shots. And so that's a super interesting game. You got a North Carolina team that is looked for a while like a possible national champion against an Auburn team that's on a 10-game winning streak that was always supposed to be good, preseason top 15, didn't really get off to a great start, but now they've won 10 in a row. They've won the SEC tournament, and they play a style that makes it dangerous for you if they start connecting on shots that they're capable of making. So this should be a fun night. I mean, we didn't even talk LSU, Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously interesting for a lot of reasons. You've got a Hall of Fame coach coaching against a team that's without its coach because Will Wade remains suspended. And then in the nightcap, Houston, Kentucky, Kelvin Sampson might, be, Kentucky's supposed to win that game, but P.J. Washington's status it remains unclear. Even if he does play, like, how effective will he be? Mm-hmm. How many minutes will he actually be on the court? So Kentucky's very vulnerable. And Houston, as the Tigers found out in the American Athletic Conference tournament, super difficult to score on. Number one defensive three-point percentage in the country. Number 5 defensive two-point field goal percentage in the country. Number 1 defensive effective field goal percentage in the country. And so if you got to play Houston, you're in for a long night anyway. Now try playing Houston without your best player or with a limited version of your best player. Kentucky could find themselves up against it. So every one of these games is interesting on some level, and it sort of just underlines a point I'd made previously. You might have been bored by the first round or the second round, but when we get a whole bunch of chalky teams moving on, it creates these incredible matchups mm-hmm. in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight.
I hope we get some great games tonight. Thanks, GP. Appreciate your time, buddy.
All right, brother. I'll see you. Bye.
Thanks, Gary.
Gary Parrish, I'm up in New York City. Before we get to getting to Dan Wolkin, I got to give a quick shout out. My soccer team's playing like right about now.
St. Benedict?
No, this is my son's team, St. Francis of Assisi. We got
excellent.
A big game at 4:30. So shout out to the Wolves. Go get that W.
Go Wolves.
And we'll see you on practice on Sunday. Dan Wolkin from USA Today is next.
Listen to the St. Louis Cardinals game coming up tonight at 6:15 live on 92.9 FM ESPN.
folks. It's time for the 7th annual Fitz Crawfish Corvettes and Camaros Festival on April.
Yeehaw, the crawfish is back, Jack.
It's Adrian. And look, it's Mr. Crawfish.
You got that straight, Nate.
Adrian.
Come on out and see me at the Fitz on April 6th, noon to 6. I do believe this year's gonna be the best crawfish festival yet. Hot Corvettes and Camaros and other cool cars, plus live entertainment on the outside stage, a beer garden, radio remotes giving away great stuff, and lots of fun for the whole family.
And serving lots of barbecue and lots of crawfish.
When you say serving lots of crawfish, you mean like you'll serve food to me and my friends, yeah?
No, they'll be serving crawfish to people who come to eat it.
I knew it sounded too good to be true. Lady Gator!
It's Adrian. The 7th annual Fitz Crawfish Corvettes and Camaros Festival. Saturday, April 6th, noon to 6 at the Fitz Casino and Hotel. Parking and admission are absolutely free. Must be 21 to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN.
Hey, this is John Martin. I'm back to tell you about my favorite spot in Memphis, the Blue Monkey. In case you've forgotten, and you shouldn't forget, they have great burgers, some of the best in Memphis, especially the barbecue bacon burger with black Angus meat topped with melted cheddar cheese, crisp bacon, and tangy barbecue sauce. And also, don't forget Steak Night every Tuesday at the downtown location and Thursday at the Midtown location. They offer a 7 or 10-ounce filet or 12-ounce and 16-ounce prime rib that is slow roasted and just plain awesome. On Steak Night, they also feature a choice of salad and a side. They got house-made ranch dressing and the twice-baked potato. I recommend both. They got two locations, 513 South Front Street downtown at 2012 Madison Avenue in Midtown. And find them on the web at BlueMonkeyMemphis.com.
Live team trivia and karaoke every Wednesday and Thursday. Bring a team and win some green. Friday, March 29th, Dan Tunes. Saturday, March 30th, Relentless Breeze. Get more info at BlueMonkeyMemphis.com.
Guys are terrible about taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury or bad back, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than going to see a doctor. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is fill out a dynamic online visit, chat with a doctor, and get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/929. That's GetRoman.com/929. GetRoman.com/929.
Hey, this is Gary Parrish, and I've been telling you about Cooper Systems for years, the amazing work that Lee and Lauren Cooper have been doing at Cooper Systems over in the Mount Moriah office park. In fact, for 8+ years, because Cooper Systems, they've been a sponsor of the Gary Parrish Show since day one, and they've never left. That's a testament to them. It's a testament to you, and you've heard me tell you about the great work they're doing at Cooper Systems for a long, long time. Now it's time to hear from you guys.
Got a great deal on an Apple Mac from Cooper Systems, literally half the price of the big box stores. I just searched before I heard about Cooper.
The road a lot, and one day my laptop got the epic blue screen of death, and I thought I lost all my files. Cooper Systems was able to retrieve everything and even installed a new drive to make my computer faster and better than ever.
I'm one of those people Gary always refers to as the looking up stuff you're not supposed to guy. Yep, that leads to computer viruses. Cooper can take care of you, and like the ad says, they won't judge you.
That's Cooper Systems. Call them 360-9679 on the web. You can check them out at coopersystems.com.
March to the championship. Catch all the action on the hardwood at Horseshoe Tunica. Join us and cheer on your favorite team in Bluesville March 30th and 31st and April 6th and 8th. Games will be shown on 3 30-foot screens. Guaranteed seating with beverages starting at $20. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com or by calling 1-800-745-3000. The Book at Horseshoe, a slam dunk for all college tournament action. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little pill that treats ED is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month's supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to 4hims.com/men. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one little pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/men. That's forhims.com/men for your first month for just $5. forhims.com/men.
Get My Perks has a sweet deal for you today. $30 of delicious treats at Nothing Bundt Cakes for only $20. So get yours before they're gone at getmyperks.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, because all that fades. This
welcome back. Cruising along on this Friday. Getting ready for a little Cardinals baseball later tonight right here on 92.9, Brad.
Yes, it is.
Taking on the Brew Crew.
162.
Trying to bounce back. Tough loss.
That was a sucky way to end that game yesterday.
Better than my Red Sox. Good Lord. They got murdered.
Last play of the game, the guy robs the guy of a home run. It was Jose
Lorenzo
Martinez.
Kane. Great catch at the wall.
Right at the wall.
Well, they got a chance to get it back tonight.
All right.
Let's get back into the college basketball. Visit with our friend Dan Wolkin from USA Today, national columnist there. Let's make it the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Dan, Matt Stark in Memphis. How are you today?
Hey, Matt. Pretty good. What's up?
Oh, so which regional, where exactly are you?
I am home base weekend. I am not going out for the regional. I will rejoin the NCAA tournament in progress at the Final Four next week. But if there's something that I need to write about this weekend, I will do it from home.
Yeah, it's almost better, right? Like you have access to everything you need with the way that they cover the tournament over, not just this year, but over the last few years. Like, you got everything at your fingertips right there. There's, you know, almost no need to get back on the road unless you're doing feature stores, whatever. Like, you can monitor everything at once.
You see a lot more, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. The first weekend when you're anchored to a site, you're primarily watching the games at your site, and mm-hmm. then you may catch glimpses of other games. But, yeah, just there's so many things going on simultaneously.
Yep.
You're never, and especially at a regional like last night or tonight, if you're sitting there courtside, you're not going to see what happens at the other site. It's just impossible.
So you're watching along with everybody else last night, Tennessee and Purdue, and this is the question of the day. Was it a foul call? Did you agree with the call at the time as Purdue's Carson Edwards lining up that potential game-winning three?
Well, it's definitely a foul. Now, I think there's a lot of people who would look at a play like that and say, okay, it doesn't affect the shot, but even though it's technically a foul, it's not a situation where you would want to see a referee call that. And if that's the case you want to make, I am not going to argue with you. I tend to think a foul is a foul, and that referees swallowing their whistle down the stretch of a game is probably not fair to either team, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But it was a foul. It's just really a question of, because it didn't impact whether the shot was made or missed, is that a play where the referee should swallow his whistle?
Mm-hmm. I talked about this a little bit earlier with Gary. I feel that a lot of people focusing on that shot at that time, I mean, you still had overtime to go once the kid makes the two of the three free throws. And I feel that's taken a little bit of the heat off Rick Barnes for some questionable decisions. The first one being the play that they ran after Edwards hits that second free throw. So there's, I think, 1.7 seconds left on the clock. Now, I know you're not going to get, like, a great look unless you got Steph Curry sitting on the wings, in which case you inbound it and every shot's a good shot. But to take the pass to basically midcourt and then squeeze in another pass and get the timeout, like, I didn't get that one at all. And I'm just – obviously it didn't work and you go to overtime. But that to me was the first of a series of couple calls by Rick Barnes that left me scratching my head.
Well, that was definitely an unfortunate play for them. And maybe they just didn't quite communicate well enough to understand that you've only got time for one pass. Stuff like that can happen, especially when you're dealing with college players. I don't put the blame for that for the whole game on Rick Barnes. Tennessee played horribly in the first half. They missed free throws. They came back in the second half. I think it took a lot out of them to mount that run. And then they ran into a guy who was making shots in a way that he even admitted he had never made before. Obviously, they're talking about Klein. He was terrific. And sometimes you just run into a guy in a one-and-done tournament in a 40-minute game mm-hmm. who kind of has an out-of-body experience.
Yep.
And so Purdue played better than Tennessee. The game could have gone either way, but when you get behind in the first half and you're trying to hold on in a one-possession game, funny stuff can happen.
You were still the Tiger beat writer when Robert Sally went off in the tournament, were you not?
Yes.
Okay.
Cal State Northridge.
Yes, I was calling it yesterday the Robert Sally syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah, you run into that guy, and it's just something. And I got to give you credit, by the way. You nailed it during the game on Twitter, saying there was a 65% chance that the Tennessee game would end on a controversial foul call. And while it didn't end on it, it could have had they not made the call. So, like, you were dead on that. One thing that has kind of been constant is the inconsistency in college basketball officiating, and I think that drives a lot of casual fans crazy who, once they start watching more college basketball, start realizing this is kind of annoying that this – you don't know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get from game to game.
Okay, so by just the nature of this business – people who are college basketball officials are college basketball officials by and large because they're not good enough to be NBA officials. Now, certainly there are some who have gotten the call up or have gotten evaluated to be good enough to go referee in the NBA. But I think even in the NBA, which has, I think, overall good officiating, it's hard to have enough good officials across your entire league. And the NBA is going to do a better job of hiring, of evaluating, of teaching, of growing, as opposed to college, where the officials are essentially independent contractors. And yes, they get evaluated and all that stuff, but it's just not the same. So I think it's a fairly obvious thing to say that the drop-off is going to be big between NBA officiating and college officiating. But I don't know what you can really do about that other than just spending more money to hire better officials and to do a better job of training them.
You raised an interesting question early today on Twitter, and we're talking with Dan Wolkin, national columnist from USA Today. What about the losing teams when they post those post-game locker rooms all laid out for everyone to see? Latest example last night, Tennessee's social media team, Vol Hoops, put out what turned out to be a 2-minute, 28-second clip, and I know because I wrote it down, of Rick Barnes' post-game speech to the players. And maybe it's just me because I've been in those losing locker rooms too many times to count. I know you have as well. They're not a fun place to be. The players don't want you there. You're getting a lot of shots if you're there with your videographer, your photographer, and be like, you know, I need something to cover the story, so let's get shots of so-and-so crying in the corner. Oh, here's a guy knocking over something or storming off. Make sure to get that. Like, it's just not a fun spot, and the players are just reacting how they're going to react. To me, it feels like you're intruding on something that's obviously something private, and certainly, you see it last night, incredibly painful for these kids. And like, I'm fine if we don't do any more of those. Like, I really get what the purpose is other than to, you know, kind of showcase, hey, look at what a great guy our coach is. He's good at consoling our kids. And, I mean, I don't know. Something about that to me, I'm not a huge fan of it. What was the reaction you were getting on Twitter today?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some both sides conversation to be had there. And it really, for me, started last Sunday night. UCF posted the Johnny Dawkins mm-hmm. Post-game speech after they lost to Duke. And, you know, it's really hard. It's very real. It's very raw. And it's it can be tough to watch. And it's unique because it's typically not a place where fans get to go. Even the media gets to go. Because after these games, They have a 10-minute cooling off period before you go in the locker room, which is intended in part or mostly to allow people to have a little bit of space to compose themselves, win or lose after the game, and take a deep breath and not be overly emotional when the media comes in and invades their space and wants to stick cameras in their face and ask questions. And so I appreciate the idea that these schools and their social media teams and the access they get, using it to give people something that they've never seen before. On the other hand, I don't really know what we're learning from these things, other than in losing locker rooms, kids who are unpaid amateur athletes are crying, and that it's really tough to talk and console them in those moments. Mm-hmm. And when the school is putting it out on social media, it just has the feel to me of the school using it to sort of drive up their, you know, their social media stats and frankly to recruit.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're sort of using it as a recruiting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it puts their coach in a really positive light.
Yep.
And there's just something about it that feels off to me. And again, I'm not like, you know, typically I have strong opinions on things. This is not something where I just think something is totally right or totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's worth having a conversation about, because there's just something about it that strikes me as maybe a little too real.
I'm with you. Not a hill you'll want to die on, but it's certainly it's an interesting part of the social media phenomenon, I guess. All right, some of the other games last night, you got Gonzaga and Virginia winning as well. And then someone that I know that you think highly of, we talked about him earlier with Gary Parrish as well, that's Chris Beard in Texas Tech, and what he's done in the 3 years that he's been there has been pretty damn impressive, off to their second straight Elite Eight. And it all kind of stems from, well, it doesn't kind of stem from, it stems from Memphis hiring Tubby Smith away from Texas Tech. And then Texas Tech realizing we need a coach and going and taking Beard away from UNLV after a whopping 10 days. And I don't know if he's on anyone's short list right now. I know there's a couple jobs open. But, man, I would think he would be after what he's done, not just in Lubbock, but his whole career. He's won everywhere he's been.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told Texas Tech fans the day that it was reported that Tubby Smith was going to go to Memphis, that they were going to be 3 years later playing for the second straight time to try to go to the Final Four, I'm not sure that they would have believed. I don't even think it would have been possible to conceive of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, it was viewed as a really tremendous accomplishment for Tubby Smith just to get that team to the NCAA tournament. And I think they went one and done. And so it's hard to... You know, sometimes people who are in that coaching business sort of just flash in a way that just makes it so obvious that they are better than most of their peers at this. And I think Chris Beard has put himself in a position to where he's now viewed that way. And it's not something that people necessarily saw coming, because the guy was languishing in Division II and Division III and, mm-hmm. you know, for years. But he is obviously that good.
Got four games on tap tonight, starting in the East Region. Number 2, Michigan State. They are a 6-point favorite over the Will Wade-less LSU Tigers. What was your reaction to the general outrage, I guess, and, I can't believe that just happened, when Tom Izzo was pointing his finger in the kid's face the other day and, you know, clearly animated about whatever had happened on the floor. The kid, by the way, later didn't seem to have a problem with it, but a lot of America did. I mean, honestly, it didn't bother me, but what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I don't really know where the outrage was. Who was outraged?
Oh, everywhere on Twitter, it seemed like.
Sarah Spain was one. The one that was prominent on this station was Sarah Spain.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, but, right, okay, but the problem is...
I get what you're saying, though, Dan.
There's an outrage culture now where, you know, somebody... If you sort of question something, I think it's fair to ask Tom Izzo, yo, what was going on there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was not a normal interaction.
Yep,
and,
right.
You know, I think it's okay to have an opinion that, you know what, I wouldn't want my son or my daughter to be subjected to that is somebody who is a college athlete. And that's fine. But I did not get the sense that, like, there was this revolt nationally against Tom Izzo. And yet people sort of love to push back against, you know, the snowflakes or whatever. And that creates the outrage, more so than the original outrage itself, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense. So I just didn't think it was that big of a story. I didn't think Tom's response when he was asked about it was all that good, because I think he was far too dismissive of the core issue here. And when he tried to equate it to, you know, someone in journalism being held accountable for the job they do, well, let me tell you something. If my boss screamed at me that way, I'd go file a complaint mm-hmm. with HR, and you would too if you did that at the radio station, because that is not how corporate America works or how the real world works. That is not how people who have a normal professional relationship hold each other accountable. So I just did not think that was a very smart response by Tom.
Who do you like in the game tonight?
I like Michigan State, because no disrespect to Tony Benford, but when Tom Izzo has a week to prepare and you're preparing for somebody who, I mean, is just quite frankly not regarded as a very good X's and O's coach, but who has obviously done a solid job of keeping the wheels from falling off, I just think it's a mismatch that will be exposed to a greater degree by Izzo having a lot of time to prepare.
Talking with Dan Wolkin, national columnist at USA Today. Before we let you go, let's rip through the other games. And you got North Carolina taking on the SEC champion Auburn Tigers. Tar Heels, big favorites. They've looked great. Auburn, you give them a puncher's chance simply because they just love to jack up that three. And if they hit 16, 17, 18, you know, the other team's got a problem.
Yeah, I mean, they have a chance, certainly. I think teams that try to run with North Carolina historically just don't come out on the good side of that. And certainly Auburn has got some guys who can get hot and light it up. But defensively, they're not great. They're going to give up offensive rebounds. I just think North Carolina will, in the end, have a little too much.
Meanwhile, you got Zion Williamson, top-seeded Duke, taking on Virginia Tech. A lot of reports that Buzz Peterson's got one foot out the door, but regardless,
Williams.
Buzz Williams, my bad. Thank you. Right. Buzz Peterson, old Tennessee coach. Mm-hmm. Hokies are underdogs, but clearly Williams is a terrific coach. He has already beaten Duke earlier this year. I know Zion didn't play, but also the Hokies are missing their best player. I'm just not ready for Zion Mania to come to an end, though. I would just like to see this train continue. Just I enjoy watching them.
Oh, and certainly the people who are monitoring television ratings at CBS, mm-hmm. I'm sure rooting for Zion to make it to the Final Four a week from Saturday. It's going to be a tough game. Duke has no easy games remaining, none. Tonight's going to be tough. If they play Michigan State, that's going to be tough. Gonzaga's going to be tough. I don't know if Duke will be able to survive all of that because they are – I don't want to say that they're a team that is easy to beat, because they're not. They have not lost very many games. But they are definitely a team that you can devise a plan that makes it hard for them to do a lot of what they want to do. And then it just comes down to how good – or how much better than everybody else can Zion be on the floor. Most of the time, he's up to that task. It's possible he won't be at one of these games along the line here.
And the final game tonight, you got the third-seeded Houston Cougars, 3-point underdogs to John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. I guess we're all kind of waiting to see the status of P.J. Washington, Kentucky's leading scorer. Although, after being in a hard cast a week ago, I can't – I mean, I'm not a doctor. I've never played one on TV or anything like that. But I can't imagine he's anywhere near 100%. And Houston's a really good team. Like, I'm kind of intrigued to see how this one plays out.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on it. Originally, in my first bracket, I had Kentucky getting to the finals. And then the P.J. Washington news came out. And I just don't think without him they're good enough to get to the Final Four, and probably not even good enough to win tonight. I think Kentucky will have some difficulty with just how hard Houston plays. It's a totally different challenge than what they had against Wofford. I mean, frankly, Wofford was good, but Kentucky could have easily lost that game. Now they're playing a team. I mean, Houston's a different beast, I think, than Wofford. And those guys just go really, really hard. And if Kentucky is not 100 on the intensity meter, they will get beat and get beat pretty soundly.
How's your overall bracket looking? I wasn't even aware that you had done one.
I don't really advertise it too much. I might have been. I did pick Purdue over Tennessee.
Okay.
So that was a good pick.
It's because you hate Tennessee, Dan. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. I picked Florida State over Gonzaga, and that didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Michigan over Texas Tech, so that didn't work out either.
All right.
We'll see tonight.
We'll see. Hey, appreciate your time, Dan. We'll look forward to listening to you as you join Gary next Friday.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Wolkin, USA Today. So I never actually got the answer yesterday. And by the way, have we updated the bracket standings on 92.9? Maybe we'll do that when we come back.
We'll pull it
because,
up and you can follow along.
I feel like I won a couple games last night in my other pool. I picked the same thing. And we'll touch on
that
in
four stories. You use the same bracket for all of your competitions.
I am a one-bracket guy. We'll get into that later on in the show. But I have, I've upped my chances of total pointage, so I feel like I may have moved out of fourth from dead last.
Jason and John are second place in the country in
this.
The morning the radio station competition they're doing for Golic and Wingo. So there's a chance that some listeners they'll be able to select to go along with them to Bristol.
Dude, that would be awesome, and they get to do a show from up there.
They do their show from ESPN Bristol. But here's I think what we're rooting against. We're rooting against North Carolina at this point because that's
very
the competition.
Easy for me.
They picked
Good.
Duke.
Okay.
So I think that's where they're at with it.
Okay.
And some other stuff has to happen, but that's part of it.
All right, we're gonna find out from Jeff Calkins the status of his bracket, which is likely
the bracketologist himself,
likely not been completed, and we'll get into why, and we'll do that when we come back. Matt Stark in for GP, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen to the St. Louis Cardinals game coming up tonight at 6:15 live on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN, WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett, WMFS Memphis, a radio.com sports station. This is 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So there was a woman named Laura. She lived out in East Memphis, right? But she wanted to sell her home, so she got in touch with the real estate agent I've been telling you to get in touch with for years now. His name's Josh Hysaw. Josh went to work, got 19 showings inside of a week. That home sold for the full asking price. Now, how did Josh do it? He did it with his 45-day guarantee. Josh, he's an experienced and effective agent who could expose your home to the most buyers with the best marketing strategy and then negotiate for the most money possible. He's got a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold fast and for more money than the average agent. The first step is Josh helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive. Then you guys agree on a price. He goes to work. And if your home isn't sold in 45 days at that agreed-upon price, this is the 45-day guarantee. Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until the home sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick. Totally up to you. And it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh does not obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, even if your opinion doesn't make sense, you can fire him, no questions asked. You can do it with a text message. So, understand, he's got flexible fees. There are no upfront cost. So if you're trying to sell a home, use the only real estate agent I would use if I wanted to sell my home. It's Josh Hysaw, 461-8147. He's on the web, joshsellsthemidsouth.com.
Get more 92.9. Download the radio.com app now and make sure your favorite 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis.
Hi, Amy. Welcome to the Xfinity store.
Yeah, I'll get straight to it. I'm looking for the fastest internet.
Well, with Xfinity, you can get the fastest, most reliable internet, and you can pause your in-home Wi-Fi for family time.
Wow, internet that's crazy fast and reliable? It's like a cheetah that you trust enough to house-sit your pets.
I don't know if you should trust a cheetah with your pets.
Well, you're the one who said he's crazy fast and reliable.
No, I said Xfinity XFi is.
Just like the cheetah.
We're still talking about internet, right?
It doesn't matter. I'll take it.
Get speed, coverage, and control with Xfinity XFi. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Get started with Xfinity Internet for $29.99 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement. Plus, add XFi Advantage to get enhanced network security, safer browsing, and more. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today to learn more. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. Ends 4/9/19. Restrictions apply. New performance starter 25 megabits per second internet customers only. Actual speeds vary. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Hey, everybody. Now, let's be honest. How many hands will go up if I ask who wants a hot new Chevy Silverado truck? I see you there. Well, then you need to be where I am right now. The best Silverado place and the best testing ground for Silverados in the Mid-South. All-Star Chevrolet in Olive Branch. And it just so happens it's Chevy Truck Month. So come drive as many Chevy Silverados as you want. On the highways, on the back roads. Give it a real spin so you know what you really want. And most of the 2018 and 2019 Silverados have zero interest for 72. Plus, get $1,500 cash back with a new 2018 when you finance with GM. Truck Month brings all the great deals and All-Star has all the best Silverados. Not just that, All-Star has all the Tahoes and Suburbans because they have all the new Chevys you're looking for. It's an easy drive from anywhere in Memphis or Collierville and Mississippi. So seriously, find new roads. Because if you want a Silverado in this part of the country, there's no place that beats Truck Month here at All-Star Chevrolet in Olive Branch. Go see them at allstarautogroup.com.
I'm a real person, real voice, and a real face. Even though you can't see it because, you know, radio invisibility. You know what else is super duper real? Geico.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.